This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Guy Donaldson.
Alison Molden.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Guy, you had been teaching at schools in Palmerston North. You then left that to become a private music teacher.
Piano teacher.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And for me, this was an opportunity for me to shift my focus back on my own piano work, which was very difficult to sustain while being a head of music at Awatapu College, and with especially since I was the founding head of music at Awatapu College, and there was a whole...
Founding head?
Yes.
So there'd been no music teaching?
No, I was the employed in the second year of the existence of Awatapu College.
Oh, okay. And with many students then?
They started off building the school year by year. So in the first year, there was only third formers, and then the second year when I was employed, there was third and fourth formers, and so that they gradually built the school in that way.
As a new school, was it being built with a particular culture in mind or something? Yeah.
The culture that was implicit or even explicit was of equality for all. It was to get away from the notion of streaming of students, and so that it was rigorously non-streamed, so that there was in any classroom there was supposed to be the range of aptitudes.
And that caused problems?
I found it caused problems. As with anything, if you go from one extreme to another, you just produce different imbalances. And instead of the imbalances being that at schools where they had streaming, where the lower streams were seen to be undesirable as compared with the upper streams, that where there was rigid non-streaming, you often found that the teachers were stretched in order to accommodate both ends. And my experience was that the less able students could sometimes colour what the most able students were prepared to do. Yeah. And so this was, for me, it created the tall poppy syndrome.
Yeah.
And which made it very difficult for me as a founding music director.
Yeah.
That in attempting to create choirs and orchestras and those things which I saw as my mission, it again was to continue the concert music tradition and creating extensions of that, which went broader than just the concert music tradition, but it had that at its heart.
Yeah. Did it mean that discipline was a problem as well then, with all the mixing like that?
Discipline could be an issue because, of course, there was no corporal punishment.
Yeah, I'm thinking more you'd have some students who were going there wanting to learn and others who other motives or whatever.
Yes. So. I seem to remember that there were sometimes issues of discipline which the individual teachers had to cope with. But they tended not to be things which became enormous, at that school, enormously overwhelming.
Okay.
I remember I lost a whole class once in one session when I did a stupid thing. A boy was tapping his pen regularly while I was teaching, and I asked him to put the pen away, and he carried on tapping it, and I said, "This has to go away or else." And so he continued to tap. So I went up, took the pen from him, and I snapped it in two and lost all the girls in the class. So that from then on, I was persona non grata.
And you lost the girls in the class?
Oh, that they all the girls.
They sympathised with the boy.
Yeah, they sided with the boy. I'd done a dreadful thing by just destroying his biro. Yeah. And you know, that was it's funny to look back on. It was, you know, it was a particular and there was always issues of discipline, but I don't remember them being so overwhelming as requiring crisis management at that time. But in any case, I got to a point. And I was become an assistant dean, and I was having responsibilities as well as being the head of the music department. And I was assisting with a school production at Girls High, and I was asked by the headmaster to consider my priorities. And that that I owed all my allegiance to the school. So I was very upset because I was actually doing lots of things there. So he asked me to report back in 2 weeks' time about how I'd reconsidered my priorities. And so I came back to him in 2 weeks' time and said, thank you, I have reconsidered my priorities. And he said, yes, what have you come up with? And I said, I'm leaving.
Was he surprised?
Yes. The sort of a classic shock reaction, and I said, at the end of the year, I shall be leaving. And that was what led me. I was had decided that I would become a postie, and I would focus on my piano work again. And come the end of the year, he didn't think I would actually leave, but I did. And I have to say, at the time, that because teaching back then was tough, as it is even more so these days, a lot of the teachers were, dare I say it, in awe of the fact that I was stepping out into a limbo. And as it happened, at the end of the year, there were no postie jobs going that I could earn a living. And so I did the obvious thing, which was to set up my own piano teaching practice. And because of my connections and the rest, it didn't take me long to be able to create a teaching practice.
So that would be mainly evening and weekend work?
It was after school and Saturday mornings. Not so much the evenings, although because the evenings were often spent doing rehearsals for.
So you could make a decent living just after school period and Saturday.
Yes, and my wife was teaching, and so all was going swimmingly until it didn't, and then when it didn't, suddenly I realised my marriage had collapsed. And
you think that was partly because you stopped being a full-time teacher?
No, it was because in order to earn an income, my time was spent significantly after school hours. I hadn't realised it that I wasn't aware of where my wife was at. And so that when I realised that that there were significant issues, I decided that I couldn't carry on doing what I was doing, and so I abandoned my private music teaching and enrolled as an English teacher at Palmerston North Girls High School, so I could have a stability of income and be available after school and all the rest of that.
And had your money collapsed, you said, or it was at risk of collapsing at that stage? Your marriage?
My marriage was at that stage was collapsing.
Okay.
It was in a limbo.
Okay.
So it was a very difficult time because I found myself at girls' high school teaching English, and I kept on pinching myself to say, what am I doing here? I had to remind myself why I was doing that, because I abandoned my teaching practice
Which you enjoyed?
I'd enjoyed, and I had some promising students, including Jonathan Bear-Khan, who's a leading performer in Wellington, and I met up with the head of music, Mary Ayres, who I was later to have a significant a working relationship with. She was to become a leading singing teacher in Palmerston North. And so I did that, and then my wife chose to shift to Auckland. And so I had the choice of either staying behind or following to Auckland.
Yeah.
So I made the choice to go to Auckland and lived separately and started in Remuera a piano teaching practice.
And your relationship with your stepchild, had they left home by then?
My eldest daughter, who was the one that was my adopted daughter, she chose to stay behind in the family home. The other two went to Auckland, which is part of the reason why I chose to difficult situation there. In Auckland, it was very difficult, from nothing but no reputation in Auckland, creating a teaching practice there. And to I got a part-time job as a music teacher at Sacred Heart College in Auckland, and which helped keep the wolf from the door. I did some a small amount of performance work there. The big thing for me was that I was appointed the repetiteur, the vocal trainer, and for a big production which is being mounted in Auckland of a Leonard Bernstein piece called Mass, which involved huge resources, including the Auckland Choral Society, another Auckland choir, a jazz band, 10 soloists, and all the rest of that. And John Matheson, who was a Covent Garden conductor, there he was to conduct it. And I was appointed to make sure that everything was in place for the time that when he came back to conduct it all. And so I had a very significant focus for that. And I finished playing in the orchestra with the Auckland Symphonia. And so that was a big focus for me, which took my attention somewhat away from the fact that I was struggling financially. And so at the end, towards the end of the year, I came back to Palmerston North to visit friends and met up with a friend of mine, Robert Hoskins, who had been at university with me, and we had discovered a lot of music together from there. Had an evening dinner with him and his wife, and he happened to mention that there was a air position going at the Teachers College.
Okay.
And the applications were to close that evening. And so we scrawled out an application, shoved it under the door and of the Teachers College, and they went home. And I duly got a call to say that I had an interview for the job, and turned up for the interview, and was told very kindly that I would receive a phone call that evening to hear whether I'd got the job or not. And I decided that I would be open with it, whichever way it would go, because I had one child in Palmerston North and two in Auckland. And I was going down the gurgler, but you know, I just had two children in Auckland, and this was fate going to tell me what was going to happen. And so I received the phone call to tell me that I hadn't got the job. So I said, okay, that's all right. Yeah. That makes clear. So I went back to Auckland, and I found myself a week later writing to a friend. Mm. And I was writing and said, I needed that job. That job was right for me. Mm. I needed that job. And I got a phone call to say the person who had been offered the job had turned it down, and the job was mine if I wanted it.
Mm. Wow.
Wow.
That's cool.
Very good. Now, can I just ask that? Because you would have had exposure to the Palmerston North music scene and then the Auckland music scene.
Yes.
Obviously, they're very different.
Yes.
So, what's your view on the two of them?
I had already discovered that in Palmerston North, I could be in the position of having very fine artists come to Palmerston North, and I could have experience of working with them. I could be a relatively big cog in the music or the scene, whereas in Auckland I was small, very small beer, and always would be if I made it.
Yeah.
And Auckland was an overwhelmingly big place at that time. You had to travel from anywhere to anywhere, that you had to allow so much time to do so. And there, so it was already overwhelming, the idea of establishing myself in a way that would work for me. And there was the pain of being relatively close to a family which was separated from me.
Yeah.
And so, so in any case, the universe had allowed me to have time to decide what I really wanted. And so I returned to Palmerston.
Can I just add another sensitive thing? That given you meant, you talked about the father of your stepchildren, and then you were sort of in a similar situation. Did that give you a different insight into that relationship?
Yes. But, despite the pain, in retrospect, there was a lot of learning to come from it all. And I realised that at that point I probably didn't always adequately follow it up to realise that life had to be held in balance and not to allow career or whatever to so dominate that you could lose track of the things which were truly important. At that stage in my life, and a career was all, because that was that was the time in which to build career.
Well, you would have been brought up, as I like myself, with the idea, as a male, your role is to follow a career, be as successful as possible, because that's providing better for the family, on the assumption that the family will just be there, whereas that no longer applies.
Yeah. Whereas my wife, what attracted me to her at the time was that she was a self-made woman and a woman's liver, as it were, and we'd started off in a traditional relationship, but by the end of it she had decided that she wanted something different, and
she wanted to find herself. That was a line that was often said for and she'd take the family with her when she's doing it.
And all those things. But I was following the traditional male path. And so I had to stop and consider, what was happening here, and that I had allowed my life to get out of balance.
So had the term work-life balance come to prominence by
not necessarily at that stage, but I was discovering for myself then that I had to take responsibility for the fact that I had contributed in my zeal to create a career. And I was also discovering at the time when I was in Auckland that no matter how good I got, part of what had happened is before I went to Auckland is that with the help of my wife, I'd had gone to London and had some months of study in London with two top teachers. I was very fortunate there, because they Paul Hamburger, who was an ex-BBC chief accompanist, and he didn't ask me for an audition recording or whatever, when I was he took me on board He said to me later on that he'd never had a dud New Zealander, and that I had him, and I also had a student of his, Roger Vignoles, who was an international piano accompanist. There I had the benefit of training from them. And so that was added backbone to and clarity to my piano studies before I came back to New Zealand, and that was preceded my marriage breaking up. I had the advantage there of at that point of having even greater focus about what I was doing musically.
Okay. And then you came back to Teachers College.
And then came back to Teachers College, which was a revelation for me.
Yes.
In that most of my teaching was in the primary sector rather than the secondary. And I had to learn from scratch a whole different set of values.
So at Teachers College, your role was teaching people how to do primary school music?
Yes.
Okay.
And there were two cohorts, as it were. There were the generalist teachers who weren't music specialists, and there were those who were taking music as a subject studies, those who were wanting to have leadership in the area of music. And so it was a brilliant program. And Graham Parsons was the head of the music department, and there was Morva Croxon alongside there, and Fleur Stark, Robert Hoskins, who later on moved to Massey proper there, and as part of the Winnington Conservatorium of Music, and later on Jenny Boyack joined us there. And it was, from our perspective these days, the money was available for a hugely liberal education. The students had 3 years at Teachers College learning how to be teachers. They were taught how to teach their subjects, and they were also all given tuition in the content of the subjects that they were to teach. And the music department itself was all the time ringing with music.
Yeah. Now, how you went through the degree, 1 year teacher training.
Yes.
And this was the 3-year degree.
Three-year diploma, and you could then go on to do a fourth year to have a degree.
Okay. So how would you compare the two approaches, having experienced one and then taught in the other?
The 1 year program that I experienced was basically how to teach the material that you knew, and it was my specialised area. It worked okay, except that what we were never adequately prepared for was the experience of being in a classroom with students who didn't want to learn. And I remember at the end of our first year that I was teaching in Wellington, a representative from the staff of the Christchurch Teachers College met with all the Wellington graduates from the Christchurch Teachers College to find out how they got on. And we confronted the poor lecturer and said we were inadequately prepared for the shock of what it was like actually to teach in a classroom.
So you had no actual classroom exposure in your 1 year?
Yes, we had. We had three sections. We had been in three different schools around the country. Mm. We had had that, but we were always had the protection of the main classroom teacher in the classroom there. But it was how to deal with misbehaviour in the classroom with students. But
this was my point earlier, the question about streaming. And so when discipline becomes more important, with streaming at the top streams, it would be more focus on sharing the understanding of the discipline of the subject, and lower streams it's more discipline and getting some focus.
It was easier in streamed classes to teach the upper streams where there was a culture perhaps of competition or whatever, but certainly the expectations which were shared by middle class parents of achievement. Then when you get into the middle streamers, Then there was a more of a mixture. And then at the, dare I say it, at the bottom end, there were those who were, had special classes, for, and they were sort of vocational things. So that there was, that was how it was in my time. In any case,
I suppose the advantage of that streaming structure then would, I know there are disadvantages, but it does mean some people might be very good at teaching top streams and others very good at teaching bottom streams. But to say they all have to teach across the range is probably not so.
No matter what pathway you choose for a school culture to go to, there are always advantages and disadvantages. That you're always going to have that mixture, there, no matter which way you go. And there's no way you can decide this is the solution.
What about streaming by subject rather than for the whole...
There were certain, even at Awatapu College, I seem to remember, where there was rigorous non-streaming, I think there was streaming in maths. And so that the maths seems to, even in those non-streaming years, have been allowed to have a special treatment, I seem to remember, for my time.
This is part 3 of 5. Tune in next week for part 4.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.